Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Hey, Peter Welch, well, why is it that nobody can afford to go to college? I mean, I sent two kids to Cornell. It was expensive. I don't mind saying at the time, it was quite a few years ago, it was $25,000 a kid. I worked three jobs and I was able to do it. Now, we're talking about going to a private college could cost $60,000 or more. What's up?
Well, that's a crisis for the American middle class.
I couldn't have done it.
For low-income folks. I mean, the amount that it costs to go to college is beyond the ability of any middle class or low-income family to pay. And the cost of college has been increasing far faster than the rate of inflation, profits, or growth for over a decade. And bottom line, that when you have colleges that every time we increase the amount of aid that may be available in Pell Grants or Stafford loans, they just increase tuition. We're never going to catch up. So, you know, frankly, I think that the college administrators are understanding that their model of constant tuition increases just doesn't work. And we're in the process of, I think, two things. One, trying to reimagine and restructure how it is to serve the extremely important education is delivered. And then secondly, we do have to maintain funding to provide loans and grants to our kids that want to get ahead. I mean, college education continues to be very essential. So this is, I think, something that should be on a bipartisan basis, something we look at, where we're trying to put pressure on the cost. We need our educational administrators to really take the lead on that, but we maintain some public support so that out-of-pocket doesn't really clobber families.
But why would they? I mean, if they're getting the money, I think this is the new segregation, to be honest with you, because as you said, only the richest people, you know, can afford this, and that creates an elite class, and they give out a few scholarships, but so what?
See, my view is we're at a tipping point on this. It's just gotten too expensive. And a lot of the ways that in the past colleges have subsidized is they've raised tuition and then given a break to a lot of the enrollees. So you have some kids that are paying full freight at $60,000 and others who are paying, say, half of that. And that willingness of the families who can be charged is being strained. So that model of basically cost shifting, I think, is under, and rightfully so, severe pressure. There's a real awareness that the higher education is vital. Community colleges are starting to play a very important role. Training and vocational training and apprentice programs have to be part of an approach to giving people opportunity. But, you know, where students now have about $1 trillion in debt, and they start out with the albatross of, in effect, a mortgage when they're trying to get a job. And that's in an economy where it's tough to get a job. It's tough to get an unpaid internship. I mean, this is tough. So I think all of us ought to be all hands on deck on this.
Yeah. Where's the resistance to reform coming from?
Well, to some extent from the college administrations that have done well under the old model. But it's not sustainable. And I'm seeing evidence that many of our college administrators get that. You know, at UVM, at Middlebury, which are two great institutions in Vermont, the presidents of those colleges are taking very, very aggressive steps to try to restrain tuition increases. You know, our community colleges are getting more and more popular and doing a better and better job, and they're a much more affordable option.
More affordable, Peter, but in fact, even the state universities and everything are, you know, you charge $500, and there are some kids who will not be able to go to college.
Well, that's true, and that's where there does have to be an element of public support. You know, we've been cutting back in these budgets on things that are really essential to our future. Education is one of them. We've got to give our kids an opportunity to get the education they need so they can be contributing members of the economy and society. So this is just an ongoing battle, but we, you know, this is the seed corn for the future, educated young people. So we just got to hang in there and try to make certain that we create that opportunity for them.
Talking about seed corn, is the farm bill ever going to get done?
You know, it's close to being done, and there's one person that's stopping it from getting done, and that's Speaker John Boehner. And it's really quite mystifying because he just is absolutely adamantly opposed to the dairy program. And the thing that mystifies me about it is that the dairy program actually saves taxpayers money and provides more stability for the farmers. And the reason it does that is that when they're going to, if they're going to get any safety net assistance, then that's because the price of milk has gone down. And the farmers who voluntarily participate then will reduce production so that the market can respond and have the price go up, and therefore the burden on the taxpayer to be diminished. So you've got the farmers under this program essentially being allowed to do what Apple Computer does. If iPad sales go up, they ramp up production. If they're going down, they adjust it downwards. That's what you do in the market. But the farmers need, they're not a monolith like Apple. So they've got to have this ability to work together, and the legislation gives them that. So it's just mystifying to me that that Speaker Boehner is just absolutely stonewalling on this.
But do you have any hypothesis about why?
Well, he clearly is in favor of the processors. You know, the IDFA, this is a battle between the small farmers and the big producers. And the big producers, the lower the price of milk from that they pay to the farmer, the more money they make.
Sure.
And it's really almost a monopoly at the processor level. And it's not, obviously, at the individual farmer level.
And their prices don't go down when they sell.
That's correct.
Right.
That's correct. And you know, a lot of times people going to the grocery store have been reading stories about how the farmer's not getting paid much. Their prices are going down. Right. But they look at the price of a gallon of milk, and it hasn't gone down. Well, the problem is the difference, the bigger profit goes to that processor. You know, it doesn't go to the farmer.
I've read, we've all read, that if this farm bill doesn't pass, that a gallon of milk could cost $8 or something like that.
That's right. We'd go back to this absurd situation where law that was passed in the 1940s goes into effect in 2014. I mean, that's truly bizarre, but that's essentially the up-against-the-wall situation that Speaker Boehner's decision is putting us in. And by the way, this really is Boehner. You know, as you know, I have some respect for him. I'm just mystified by his adamant position on this. And the reason I say that, the Dairy Stabilization Program got almost unanimous consent or unanimous support in the U.S. Senate, and that, you know, Republicans and Democrats. And then that plan passed in the House Agriculture Committee on a bipartisan basis. So this was the one area of policy legislation where Republicans and Democrats really worked together well. And if the Speaker put the bill on the floor, the Senate bill on the floor, gave us a chance to vote on it, it would pass. But he is using his power, and he's got the power as Speaker to decide not to put it on the floor until he gets his way. And unfortunately, his way is very punitive in terms of its consequences to the American taxpayer and our small farmers in upstate New York and in Vermont.
I got 2 minutes. Are we going to have tax reform?
I'm doubtful about that. We need it. But in all the signals I hear from Paul Ryan is that he thinks that the political situation won't accommodate it. We need it. It would help us. But the divisions on how to do it are still pretty wide.
The American people are almost resigned to this, aren't they? In other
well,
words, they
shouldn't be. I mean, they're entitled to get a lot more out of Congress than they're getting. You know, it's good progress that we passed a budget. You know, that's the first time in a number of years. It's not a good budget, but it's a budget. And it certainly beats shutdown and debt default drama. But, you know, we're neglecting the future here. We're letting our roads and bridges fall apart. We're not expanding broadband where it needs to be. We're cutting back on scientific research. The National Institute of Health, which is a crown jewel, revered by Republicans and Democrats, and fully funded, and actually funding increased under Newt Gingrich. We're squeezing the budget there. This does not make sense. And in fact, it doesn't make sense even if what your firm bottom line objective is deficit reduction. Then if you want to get the deficit down, you have to invest in places that are going to help us generate growth, jobs, and revenues.
Thank you. And Peter Welch is always one of my favorite people to have on the Congressional Corner because you get straight answers and interesting answers. Peter, thanks for being with us. And when we come back the next time, I want to talk to you about some politics, okay?
Great. Sure.